Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to The Movie Palace, a new podcast taking a look at the films of old Hollywood. I'm your host, as ever, Carl Sweeney, and this week we're sort of taking a break from speaking about a particular film as we've been doing so far. And the reason is I wanted to find out a bit more about the online classic film community, because since I started the podcast, I've discovered there's this, you know, thriving, vibrant community out there, which I wasn't really aware of until very recently. So the idea for this episode is it's the first in potentially a monthly series where I talk to somebody who writes about old films and just try to find out a little bit more about them and, of course, about the movies they love. So I'm absolutely delighted today to welcome the woman who writes the Comet Over Hollywood blog, and her name is Jessica Pickens. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. How are you doing today, Carl? Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Big thanks to you from me for coming on, of course.
Of course. Love talking about classic film and meeting other film lovers.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea to me. So what we're going to do, we'll talk a bit about like your general interest in films, your background and so on. Obviously, we'll focus on the blog as well.
Sure.
And then we're going to do a few kind of fiendish quiz questions to round off towards the end. So that's the kind of agenda anyway.
All right, that sounds great.
So let's kick off kind of at the beginning, I suppose. How did your interest in films start, and was it always kind of older stuff? Was it always classic stuff that most kind of appealed to you?
Well, you know, my parents, who are in their early 60s, they grew up, you know, and obviously they were not living in the time of the 40s and 50s films, but they grew up liking it because their parents, my mom even said, you know, she used to go to the library and look at the old Life magazines. And so growing up, they introduced my sisters and I to various classic films. White Christmas, you know, we would watch that, and Christmas in Connecticut. At Christmas time, we watched Seven Brides for Seven Brothers a lot when I was growing up, and also a lot of those 1960s live-action Disney films. Parent Trap, Swiss Family Robinson. Once my family was watching Swiss Family Robinson, it made us want to go to Disney World so bad my dad booked a Walt Disney World vacation that night. we just grew up with it. And then, so, you know, it's funny because as a little kid, you think your norm is everybody else's. So I thought everybody watched, you know, Philadelphia Story and stuff like that with their moms. And for some reason, and then, you know, I think I just started liking old stuff in general. One summer, I found the old Monkees TV show on a channel, so I watched that and really got into the Monkees, and so I was just liking older things in general until, I would say when I was 13, 14, so that last year of my middle school years, or junior high, or whatever people like to call it, I was introduced to a lot of Audrey Hepburn and Doris Day films. So I really got into that, read their biographies and autobiographies. But what was really the tipping point of the film madness was I saw West Side Story when I was 14.
Yeah.
Because my dad, he noticed I was liking musicals and stuff like that. And I'd been watching a lot of Doris Day films up until that point. And I was obsessed with West Side Story.
Yeah.
I listened to the soundtrack a lot. I researched it as much as I could online and printed off pictures and decorated my room and all that great stuff. My dad said he created a monster. But from that,
yeah,
sort of how I became really interested in musicals, because my mindset was, well, are there other musicals that I'm going to love as much as this? Then I just sought out any musical I could. Shortly after, well, maybe 6 months after that, TCM, Turner Classic Movies Spotlight, a month of musicals. I think it was either in 2002 or 2003. So I got to see a lot of things I hadn't seen before, Broadway Melody of 1929, a lot of things like that. And for whatever reason, I decided to create a list of all the musicals I'd seen. I was actually like in a history, high school history class writing it, not paying attention, obviously. And it's just kind of spiraled out of control from there, of trying to find me. At this point, MGM-wise, it's hard to find musicals I haven't seen, but there's still a lot of Paramount and 20th Century Fox musicals I haven't been able to get my hands on, or I'm not willing to kind of pay high dollar for some of the DVDs. So I still have some left to find, but that's pretty much how it went. And, you know, while watching the musicals, I would come across other movies too, or my mom, you know, saw my interest in films and said, well, here's a movie I always liked. So, you know, she would record things that she enjoyed and thought I would too. And usually, I mean, I always did. You know, there's obviously movies I've seen that I didn't care for, but we have a pretty similar interest. You know, I remember she said, oh, here's this movie, So Proudly We Hail, with Claudette Colbert and Veronica Lake and Paulette Goddard and things like that, that she thought I would really enjoy. So that's really how that all kind of got started. My sisters, you know, they grew up with it and they like classic films enough, but not to the degree that I do. So,
yeah, that sounds similar to me. Like, my brother didn't really have the same interest, my younger brother. And actually, all the people I've spoken to on the podcast so far, they've had a similar-ish kind of story where a parent has kind of shown them the ropes, or a grandparent, you know. For me, it was a bit later, really, because my parents didn't really have that interest. I just kind of stumbled upon old movies when I was probably early teens or something. So I kind of feel like I missed the boat a little bit. But anyway, I mean, you mentioned musicals there, and I wonder if that's preempted one of the answers to the quiz we're going to give you later on, but we'll see. Were there any genres you didn't really care for?
You know, I haven't. I'll watch pretty much anything. I don't go out of my way, or did not early on. I didn't go out of my way to watch a lot of the gangster movies. I can't remember if I've seen Little Caesar and stuff like that. I only just recently saw the Paul Muni Scarface. I saw that actually at the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival, which I enjoyed it, but I think when I was starting out, I wasn't really into that. Some of the really angsty 50s and 60s stuff, like the Tony Richardson films and stuff like that, I'll watch them, but I have to watch them sparingly because they're just so heavy and depressing. And I live in, you know, the United States South, so some of the depictions of the South and some of the Tennessee Williams stuff and the fake accents really grate on my nerves. Everybody's always yelling and very sweaty. You know, it's very hot here. Maybe that's why they're so angry. I don't know. But I watch pretty much anything because I try to stay kind of well-rounded with it. There's a lot I haven't seen. I pretty much watch anything from the dawn of film to 1968 is really kind of what I say is my classic film time frame. But, you know, I'll obviously watch anything from the 70s and 80s as well. It did take me a while to get into. I don't think I really watched silent movies until I was in college. And because I, you know, you think if you have never seen one, you think, oh, it's going to be boring. There's no talking. And then you realize once you start watching it that you forget that nobody's talking. So
absolutely. I mean, I think for me, I suppose something like sci-fi is something where I've only really seen a few of like the, you know, the biggest titles of that time, you know. I suppose that would be on my to-do list, yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of those either, actually. I haven't even seen Forbidden Planet. I still haven't even seen Forbidden Planet.
I mean, for me, when I got into these films, or this era anyway, so like I say, probably early teens, 13, 14, what I found was, like, my friends at school just had no interest whatsoever, you know. So is that kind of what you experienced too, that you were just kind of alone in that sense?
Pretty much. And I felt pretty alone, honestly, until I found film Twitter. Now, you know, I had my close group of friends. I was in marching band in high school, and I don't know how it is over there, but in the Americas, marching band people are kind of nerdy and kind of stick together. So most of them were tolerant, at least, of my film interests. And I felt like people were more accepting once I went to college. I was at a liberal arts school, so it was all very artsy and people seemed to think it was cool. But, you know, for the most part, I did feel like, well, it's just me. But then I did find film Twitter. So that was a really great outlet to discuss films and meet other people. And I have met some of them in person at different festivals or what have you. So that really has been for a classic film fan. Because before that, I don't know if you remember or ever used them. IMDb used to have the message boards.
Yes, I do.
I would go on there from time to time, but, you know, it's not everybody would reply to your stuff or whatever. And people, like anything, like any social media or message boards, people could get kind of mean.
Absolutely.
That was like the pre-film Twitter where there was message boards.
Yeah, I've only just recently stumbled across like film Twitter, as you say, and I was kind of a late adopter to social media, really. So, but it's really good, isn't it? There's like so many nice people out there.
Yeah, that people are mean on social media, but I feel like most film Twitter is fairly friendly.
Yeah, let's just touch on. So you were talking there about kind of some films you didn't want to pay to track down and so on. I was just wondering, from like an American perspective, like, yeah, how easy is it generally to see classic movies? Because I can only compare it to like the situation here in the UK, obviously. And I just wonder how it differs. So is it easy to see these films at the cinema? And what kind of options do you have on the TV? And, you know, how does it work exactly?
So where I live in a smaller town in the South, and even my family, my parents live in a growing city, I would say, in South Carolina. And really the only way in our area to see films on the big screen, there's, I don't know if you're familiar with Fathom Events. That's who Turner Classic Movies partners with.
No, I'm not.
I'm not really sure how to define it, but they're an organization that is able to bring different events cinematically into movie theaters, so like the opera and ballet and stuff like that. Turner Classic Movies has also partnered with them, so they have what they call TCM Big Screen, and this has actually only been going on for about maybe 3 or 4 years, where they've been doing it regularly. Once a month, TCM has a movie in the movie theater. Now, before they started doing this 3 or 4 years ago, they would have it sporadically, maybe once or twice a year, and it would be a really big event. Like in 2011, I guess it was an anniversary for West Side Story, they brought that to the big screen. And then that same year, or later in the year, they had Singing in the Rain, and I think that was probably an anniversary for it too. So they only had them for really big events, but now they're doing it monthly. So if it's something that I'm interested in seeing, I'll go to the theater to see that. But otherwise, just in my area, it's kind of a rarity to find, you know, a random screening of, I don't know, Random Harvest or something like that. You know, I know in larger cities like New York City or Los Angeles, they have a lot more resources, you know, through the Museum of Modern Art and things like that to see these films. But, you know, that'd be a little bit far to travel. I'm about 2 hours from Atlanta, Georgia, where TCM is headquartered, and they're a larger city. So I did notice that they'll be like showing Lawrence of Arabia on 77mm in August. So, you know, if I want to travel a couple hours, I could go see it, but locally, not really. As far as viewing on TV, I have what we call basic cable. So Turner Classic Movies is probably the best resource for that. American Movie Classics used to be more like Turner Classic Movies, but about 20 years ago that shifted, and it's mainly all newer movies or new TV shows like Breaking Bad and things like that. And there is Fox Movie Channel, but I've never had that. And supposedly they did show, you know, the Betty Grable, Marilyn Monroe movies, but I don't know that they do that anymore because I've never had that channel. But, you know, I buy a lot of my movies if I want to see them, or I'll try to find them on YouTube or what have you. Filmstruck through TCM has been a really good resource if you want to see those more artsy films. But, yeah, that I would say my main go-tos are buying the films or watching them on Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah, that sounds similar to me, actually. I mean, we have TCM over here, but I get the sense it's quite different to the US one. But it's still very good. And it's like you said, for me, for seeing films on the big screen, I'm a couple of hours away from London, so I can get there if I really want to. Like, we're going to... we're seeing Mildred Pierce next month.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and we're going to do a live podcast from London about it as well. There's, like, a Joan Crawford season going on. It looks really cool. And, like, the city I'm closest to, Birmingham, is... It's nowhere near as big as London, but that also, you know, you can see stuff there too. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about your blog then. So, Comet Over Hollywood. Yeah, I'm just interested in how it kicked off, really.
Well, I was a journalism major in college, and one of my professors, so I'm also looking up something so I can tell you where the name came from, but one of my professors said, and this was in 2009 when I started my blog, blogging was really big then, and he said, if you want to get hired, you need to start a blog. And so I was like, do I really want to start a blog? And then I thought, you know, this would be a way that I can actually talk about classic films and have a good space rather than just posting on Facebook or whatever. And maybe I'll find people who care about it. And I did meet, you know, some people that I'm still friends with through blogging. At that time, I guess people were just seeking out other classic film blogs, and we'd read each other and stuff like that. Now, blogging isn't as big as it was then, but a lot of people have stuck to their blogs. So next year will actually be my 10th anniversary of it. But yeah, it really started because a professor highly encouraged it, and then I thought, well, maybe that's what I want to do. And so it took me a while to kind of, like, I look back at my really early posts, and I'm kind of embarrassed because they're stupid, but I was also, you know, 20. It took me a while to finesse it to where it is now, but I think, you know, as people have been keeping up theirs, and it's a shame, you know, there's a lot of blogs I used to keep up with that no longer are around, but you know, that's just the way life is, I guess. But the title, Comet Over Hollywood, so I originally had it called Living on Velvet, which is a Kay Francis movie. And then I came across a blog, and it was also called Living on Velvet, and I was like, oh no, I need to change it so people don't, you know, get us confused. I don't even think that blog exists anymore. But I was really into Kay Francis at the time, so I looked through all our movies and I found Comet Over Broadway from 1938, and so I just changed it to Comet Over Hollywood, and that's how it stuck.
So, I mean, you've got a couple of really interesting, like, ongoing features, which we'll come on to talk about. But before we do, I mean, I see you've also got, you know, there's quite a few interviews that you've done on there too, so maybe you could just tell me, like, who you've spoken to and stuff like that.
Oh, goodness. So I probably the one that people talk about or know about the most is Dolores Hart. She was a big actress. She was in movies like Where the Boys Are, you know, Loving You. She gave Elvis his first kiss in the movie Loving You. And at the height of her career, she decided to become a nun. And that kind of shook the world. And at that time, I think nuns are a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? They're not as restricted in the way they live, but at that time it was still very strict. And I was reading her book, The Ear to the Heart, An Actress's Journey from Hollywood to Holy Vows. And it was really interesting because it's funny, she converted to Catholicism because she went to a... Catholic school, but only the Catholic children got to have like hot chocolate and sticky buns or something like that. So she was like, I want this snack. So she convinced, she was mainly raised by her grandparents. She convinced them to let her convert over. So, you know, and she went into Hollywood and enjoyed acting, but she would go on like a kind of a retreat for herself to this, place in a nun place. I'm not finding my words right now.
Like
but,
a convent, is it?
A convent, yeah, yeah. That's the word. And actually, it's where she ended up being. But she would go on a retreat there and just found a sense of peace. And she felt like it was a calling. But she was in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is about an hour away from me, at the Charlotte Eucharist Convention, which is a big Catholic convention. And I caught wind of this and sent them an email because I had her book and said, is there a way we can meet up? And we met up and she agreed to take a picture with me. And so that was really cool. She was a very nice lady. Let's see. I've also interviewed James Best. He was a pretty small actor. Not a small, but he was mainly a character actor through the 40s and 50s and worked with, you know, Rock Hudson and Jimmy Stewart and people like that. You'll spot him kind of in the background. He usually just plays like a country bumpkin a lot of times. But he happened to be in the area I live in North Carolina. And I, for the paper I worked with, I was able to interview him for that. I'd say those are the two biggest ones. I'm hoping to get some others soon, so stay tuned. But, oh, and then another exciting one was, so for the past three summers, starting in 2015 and ending last summer, I was doing this big project on the Gidget franchise, about the girl midget who surfed. And, you know, in the 50s, surfing, and I think probably even now a little bit, but in the 50s and 60s, you know, you didn't really think of girls surfing. And so Gidget was a real lady, Kathy Koner, and her dad wrote a book about her, Frederick Koner. He was also a screenwriter. And I was able to get a hold of her on the phone, and we did a little interview and talked about, you know, her surfing days and all that. But she really said that, you know, everybody sees it as her success, but she sees it as her father's because it, I mean, really, I guess on the surface, Gidget, the movie from 1959, is kind of a silly little girl story, but it's a lot more than that because it started the surf culture, so the Beach Boys and all those beach party movies with Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon. So that whole craze started. After that movie and book came out, Malibu in California was just swamped with people. But also, it's kind of a, if you will, a feminist story because it was a girl that just was like, I want to surf and I'm going to surf. So those are the top interviews I've mainly done.
All right. Well, let's talk about, I mean, two of the like ongoing features I've been following along with the last few weeks has been, one is called Watching 1939, isn't it? And
yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're trying to watch every film that Hollywood released in 1939. Is that the aim?
That's correct. So I probably will throw in some British films just because I've run across those as well. Really any English-speaking film because that's just what I was going with. But yeah, that it started a few years ago and it's kind of nutty, but gosh, I mean, it probably started in 2011 or 12. So I've been working on this a long time and still have a very long way to go. But I just thought, you know, we all talk about how 1939 is so great and we mainly talk about Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and Gone with the Wind and
The Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz. Big films like that. And I thought, well, what about all the other little films? So that's what I'm doing. I'm working my way through that. And so I thought, well, if I'm watching it, what better way to kind of keep note? Because I was sporadically taking notes, but what better way to keep notes about them all than to write about them? And kind of the same thing with Musical Monday.
Yeah.
When I was trying to still, this started in watching 1939, I started the series this past January. So that hasn't been going on very long, but I started Musical Monday in 2013 because I was still trying to kind of find what I wanted to do rather than writing sporadically with the blog and thought having a weekly series would force me to write, but also kind of keeping notes on all the musicals I've watched and, you know, there's a lot of movies I've seen, but I've seen a lot of them only once, so it's a good way to have to go back and revisit them, because there's one quote by, I'm not sure who said it, but basically you're not an expert on a film if you've only seen it once. So it's been fun to revisit some of them. Some of them aren't very good, and I'll be the first to say it, but that's been a fun feature to do, just to, you know, revisit some of these musicals and try to discover some new ones.
And are you going, like, chronologically, or is it just kind of, you know, whatever you feel like doing any particular week, or...
It's just whatever I feel like doing, yeah. Whatever I end up, you know, I might be seeing what I recorded recently, and I'll go, I'll be like, oh, well, here's what my musical Monday is. Like, I was going through what I've recorded, and there's a musical that's coming up, and I'm like, well, that just might be my musical Monday. Or when TCM in June was doing the Mad About Musicals, I was trying to coordinate the musicals I was writing about to go along with theirs, because since they're writing about musicals, what better way to kind of marry that? Or, you know, if it's like around Christmas, I'll try to find some sort of musical that vaguely talks about Christmas, though I think I've kind of exhausted that, so there's only so many.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty, or, you know, some summers I've done, you know, ones only Esther Williams or only beach party movies to go along with summer. But yeah, it's pretty kind of the luck of the draw.
And, like, obviously those seem to be the main ongoing features. Have you got anything else that's kind of you're writing regularly or not?
Not recently. You know, when I started out, I did have some other series, like I was trying Beauty Tips or classic film references and music videos. And if I come across stuff, I'll write about it now, but I was kind of running out of things to write about. And so those are more sporadic now. I've also done kind of a short series that petered off as well about, since I live in North Carolina and grew up in South Carolina, about actors who lived or were born in this area. So that's kind of an on again, off again series as well.
All right. What I thought would be fun, I mean, we'll find out, but I think it'll be fun, is to just run a few kind of quiz questions past you about classic Hollywood. We can spend a minute or two in each one and kind of dig into them a bit. But, I mean, the first one, I'd be amazed if the answer to this wasn't musicals. But let's find out. So, if you could only watch old Hollywood movies from one genre, what would you choose and why?
You know, when I was reading over these questions, I thought, well, musicals. But then I started to really think about it. I love musicals. I love singing and dancing in the musicals and also myself. But then I started thinking about where there have been some weekends where I've watched two or three musicals in a row, and I've been like, okay, I need a break. So I think it's not specifically a genre, but it's more of a time period. Any movies from the 1940s, especially the war years, is probably what I would choose, because that's really where a lot of my favorite films come from. I'm really interested. I love the 40s. I'm very interested in World War II history in general. So I think it would be like that 1939 to 1945 time period. I know that's a genre, but if I'm allowed to pick that,
yeah,
that's what I would.
I'll let you get away with it. Don't worry.
Okay.
I mean, I did have a couple of, because I was certain you were going to say musicals. So I was.
I know. You for a loop.
Are you like me? Do you meet people who talk to you about musicals and it's just like, we can't stand them, don't like people bursting into song, you know, just don't understand it? And like, how do you respond to like people like that? Like, well, how do you try and convince them, or are you just like, you know, okay?
Well, I don't really, you know, and I don't think I try to convince anybody. It was interesting because I didn't mention this as an interview, but it's more about musicals. One of the professors that was doing that Mad About Musicals, I did interview her, and I said, well, what do you think about people that don't like musicals? And she said, you know, I don't try to convince them, because if they don't like them, they don't like them. But basically look at them for the technological, and so this would be my answer now because I'll steal her answer, yeah. But look at them for the technological advancements they had to offer. I mean, the camera work in the Busby Berkeley films, really kind of the way to film dancing, and also that they're not the same. So from 1929 to 1939, or even from 1939 to 1960, musicals are not the same during that time period. Yeah, they all sing and dance, but their goals and their styles are all very different. I mean, Sound of Music is incredibly different from Wizard of Oz. So not only because of the technological advancements, just but also because what was going on in the world. You know, like a 1940s musical is most likely going to focus on patriotism and working together and, you know, flag waving. And a 1960s musical is most likely going to be a Broadway adaptation. So they're all very different. Yeah, I don't know that I try to convince people of it. But I usually ask, like, well, what have you seen? Because if you've only seen Sound of Music, well, Sound of Music is a very long movie. So yeah. I could maybe understand, you know, if they didn't love that. Or if they were turned off by certain aspects of, I don't know, Holiday Inn or something like that. Well, what other, you know, what other movies can you, like, have? Maybe they would like Singing in the Rain or American in Paris or Seven Brides for Seven Brothers better. But, you know, I think people would have a hard time convincing me that I should go see the latest Avengers movie. So, I don't want to, like, push people because I don't want them to do the same to me.
Yeah, totally. So, what's an old movie that doesn't get enough love?
So, I would say the movie The Locket from 1946. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It's a film noir, and it's really different because it's a retrospective and has retrospectives within it, like within the retrospectives. So, like somebody starts off telling their story, and then somebody within that story starts telling a story about somebody else. So it's kind of a web about this woman, Lorraine Day. It begins off with, it's her wedding day, and somebody comes in to warn the groom. And so that person starts telling the groom a story about his experience with her. And then within his story, somebody comes to tell him, that guy, his experience with the woman. So you're kind of trying to figure out, well, what's going on with this woman? But so Lorraine Day's in it, Brian Ahern, Robert Mitchum, Gene Raymond, Ricardo Cortez, you know, lots of people, and you're kind of trying to figure out what's going on with this. It's more psychological and has lots of flashbacks. But you get so sucked into it that you're not really confused by all the different flashbacks. But it's a really interesting movie. And, you know, when we talk about film noirs, there's a lot of lower budget, not, you know, high dollar, Double Indemnity film noirs that we discuss, but this is one that I really like that I think does get overlooked.
Now, I went on a big Robert Mitchum kick at one point, but I don't think I saw that one, so it's going on the list, definitely.
It's pretty early for him, yeah.
Okay, then. So, I suppose the flip side to that question is, what's a highly regarded old movie that gets a bit too much love?
You know, people are not going to like me for this, but probably the thing that came to mind when I saw that question was On the Waterfront. I'm not a Marlon Brando fan, and maybe I need to see it again, but I just don't, like, I'm not in awe by On the Waterfront. Actually, there's probably a couple I could list, but that's what readily came to mind. I really kind of avoid any of his movies.
Oh. I mean, On the Waterfront is so fascinating because people are still kind of arguing over the kind of message of the film, I think, and, you know, about Kazan's intentions and stuff. What about A Streetcar Named Desire? Do you find Brando a bit more tolerable in that, or no?
I started it and I couldn't finish it. It was another one of those movies where everybody was yelling and I was like, I can't do this. But maybe at the time that I was trying to watch it, it just wasn't the right moment.
So obviously the next answer to the next question is not going to be Marlon Brando then, because the question no. is, who's your favorite male star from the Golden Age?
I would say Joel McRae.
Oh, yeah.
One, because he's extremely handsome. But he's in a lot of really good movies, but he's so versatile, you know. So from Foreign Correspondent, which is one of my favorite Alfred Hitchcock movies, also an overlooked film. He's great in that. So that's like a thriller mystery. Sullivan's Travels was right after that. That's a great comedy. And then right before that was Primrose Path with Ginger Rogers, which is more of a melodramatic weeper, if you will. You know, it's kind of a women's movie, I guess, is what some people would call it. And then, you know, he was in a lot of Westerns, and he was just good in everything. And I'm not, like, I like Westerns, but they're not my favorite. And I like, and, you know, this was his personal decision. He got to a certain point in his career where he said, it's ridiculous for me to be, you know, like a lot of older stars, like Cary Grant, he would be paired with somebody who was like 22 when he was 52 or something. And Joel McRae thought that was ridiculous. So that's why he stuck to Westerns. And that he just stayed true. I like that he kind of stayed true to his own decision. And that's what he made until he retired from films in 1976.
Yeah, because he's in a great Western in the early 60s that I really like. It's called Ride the High Country, one of Sam Peckinpah's films.
That one's good. There's one that was really good, and I think he does have a romantic interest in it, but it's called Frenchie with Shelley Winters. And it's... It's a great Western, and it's in color, and Shelley Winters is kind of sassy, and it's funny too. So that's a good one if you ever come across it.
Okay, so what about the women then? So who's your favorite female star from this era?
So that's probably a harder question for me, but I'm going to say Claudette Colbert, and I say that because she's in more of my favorite films than anybody else. Like Doris Day, truly, is my favorite actress. But if I'm weighing who has a higher quantity of films that I can watch over and over again, it would be Claudette Colbert.
Yeah. So she's with Joel McRae, isn't she, in the Palm Beach Story, for
she
example?
Is. But yeah, she's in a lot of really good movies and was in movies for a long time. But she's in a couple of my favorites that I'll mention later in some of your questions. But again, she could do comedy. She could do the melodrama, like An Imitation of Life, or Weepers, as they called them, like in the early 30s. And then she could do really great drama, too. So I feel like she was very versatile. And she, her last film was in 1961. And I don't know, I haven't, even though she's my favorite, I really haven't read a lot of like biographies on her. But, you know, I'm assuming she retired at what she felt was also, you know, her time to go. And, you know, that was rather than some of these people like poor Ray Milland, who just acted and acted and acted and wasn't a lot of kind of junk later on.
Now then, what about the men behind the camera? Because it was usually men, wasn't it? I mean, of course, there were people like Ida Lupino, who directed the odd film and so on. But who was the best filmmaker in classic Hollywood?
You know, an easy answer would be Alfred Hitchcock. But I like, this is just because I like to give this person some love. So there's the director, Clarence Brown, who is really, he filmed everything, you know, pretty much, like all sorts of genres. He was mainly at MGM, but I like him because he was versatile, and I don't think he gets as much attention as he deserves. So he did everything from Anna Karenina with Greta Garbo to National Velvet.
Yeah.
And then there's a really, really great film called Intruder in the Dust in 1949 with Claude Jarman Jr. and Juano Hernandez that has to do with racism in the 1940s South. But he was, you know, and he filmed Garbo and Joan Crawford and all these various people and Norma Shearer. And I don't think he gets the recognition that he deserves, so I always just kind of throw him out there.
And like when I think of this time period, I really like it that these guys were directing, you know, 2, 3, 4 films a year sometimes. Mm-hmm. Somebody like Michael Curtiz would be another one who just directed so much stuff, you know.
Or Norman Taurog, is that how you say his name? He filmed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of films, like a lot of Elvis movies. But from 1920 to 1968, he did like 185 films, which is just incredible.
All right. So just a couple more questions then before we let you go. So what's the best film moment that Hollywood has ever given us? So I'm kind of letting you define this. So is it a scene, an exchange of dialogue, one shot in particular? What would you say?
Oh God, I read that question and I was just at a loss and then thought, well, maybe it'll come to me.
Yeah, well, I was wondering if you were going to pick a particular like song, a song and dance routine or something, you know, because I guess you can kind of isolate those from the musicals. But what did you decide in the end?
Well, I picked, so this is just because it's humorous and it's like a joke in my family. So this is a terrible answer. But have you seen the movie Gidget yet?
Well, I've seen one of those films a long time ago, but I'm not sure whether it was the first one or not. So I'm not sure.
So she's about to leave the house. This is the first one from 59 with Sandra Dee. And she's about to leave the house to go to a party that her parents don't want her to go to. It's very hard to describe, but basically she's bringing food and money to basically bribe her way into the party. And the dad takes the leg of lamb and he shakes it. He's like, cold cash, legs of lamb. What's our family coming to? And that's what I'm going to pick, which I could have just said something like, now Voyager, why ask for the moon? Let us not have, why when we have stars and make myself look more intelligent. But that's what I'm going to pick.
Well, it's good to have a unique answer, isn't it? So, yeah, that's a good one, I think. What about the last one, then? So, is the answer going to be Gidget? Let's find out. So, what's your favorite classic film and why?
Actually, one of the moments I thought of describing was from this movie, just because the cinematography is beautiful. My favorite movie is Since You Went Away from 1944, and... it stars a whole slew of people, Claudette Colbert, Jennifer Jones, Joseph Cotten, Shirley Temple, Monty Woolley, and Robert Walker, and also Agnes Moorehead and Nazivima, if you've watched classic films, has a small role in that too. It's about the home life during World War II, so there's a lot of movies, obviously, about soldiers in war, but this is about the home front and how the war and all that was affecting people back home in America. So I think that's really unique because there's not a lot of movies about that, and at least American films about, you know, what the rationing and, you know, people dying or getting the dreaded telegrams, people hoarding, when people were supposed to be rationing. You see, and people that Claudette Colbert was friends with, she's kind of seeing their true colors and how selfish they can be, and the war work that some of them choose to do just to make them look good in society, while, you know, her daughters really want to get their hands dirty and be nurses and, you know, things that the high society people don't think are quite as nice. But it's a long movie, but I think it's really good. And it really is kind of an emotional roller coaster where you're laughing one minute and crying the next. It begins with Claudette Colbert's husband who we never see except from photographs, but he has chosen, he wasn't drafted, but he chose to enlist and go fight, and then how she and her daughters are dealing with that, and she's trying to hide, you know, her emotions from her own children, and then, you know, they realize, we can't, you know, dad had a good job, we can't afford a lot of the stuff we used to have, so they have to make a lot of budget cuts within their household, and they take an order who's Monty Woolley. It's just a really wonderful movie, and it's directed by John Cromwell, who's another really wonderful director from that time period. But the cinematography is by Stanley Cortez, who is actually the brother of actor Ricardo Cortez, and the cinematography in this movie is just gorgeous. There's a scene of a canteen dance, and they pull back the camera during, they have like a waltz, and the shadows are stretched out, and it's just beautiful. So it's fun because there's a lot of up-and-coming actors who have cameos in this movie, like Dorothy Dandridge and Rhonda Fleming, Terry Moore. So it's fun to look out for Ruth Roman, to look out for them as you're watching the movie, because, you know, I've studied the cast list a lot and I've seen it several times. So it's interesting to kind of pick them out in these scenes, because what they'll do outside of the family's story to kind of give a glimpse into what is happening and everybody else around them. There are some scenes where the camera will pan through, say, a crowded bar, and you'll hear all these different conversations of what everybody's like. I can't say I'll fit everything on those tiny V cards, or, you know, oh, I poured it all this lipstick or whatever. So you're kind of hearing everything that everybody else is discussing outside of what's going on in this family's life. So long story short, that's my classic film, because it's beautifully done, even though it's very long.
Awesome. I mean, I think I'm considering doing like a World War II season at one point, so I'll have to make sure that goes on the list. Yeah. So let's just, where can listeners find your blog, and where can they find you on Twitter and stuff like that?
Well, they can find me at Comet, Comet, over Hollywood.com. And my Twitter handle is Hollywood Comet. So it's Comet like in the sky. I know some people think I'm saying comment with an N, but it's like what shoots across the night sky. So that's where you can find me.
Awesome. And as for us at the Movie Palace, you can find us on Twitter at Movie Palace Pod. We're on Facebook as well. Or you can find me on Twitter at csweeney758. Now, I think last time out I said the Philadelphia Story would be coming next. It is coming soon, I promise, listeners. But I think on the next episode I'm going to be talking to the film critic Darren Mooney about Gilda. So I hope you can join me then, listeners, when the curtain rises once more at the Movie Palace.